So here we are, and the system is broke. American dream has gone up in smoke. So stop sitting there all brokenhearted. Let's get this motherfucking party started. Lady Liberty is ringing a bell, and we're driving us straight into hell. But don't worry, we got what you need. Crank up the volume till your eardrums bleed. Go and make America, America again.
A better way to a professional criminals.
So Jack, have you ever sold guns?
No, arms dealer. Just kidding.
What he did on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds like a sick ass video game. Selling guns on the Appalachian Trail.
Appalachian gun dealer.
Yeah,
but I've bought so many guns at Walmart parking lots, and like it always feels so illegal, right? Like this is so wrong, but
yeah,
it's totally legal, right?
Yeah. Well, it depends, you know. I remember when I was in school in Arizona, there was this, I can't remember what like news channel organization or whatever, but they did some sort of like expose on how easy it is to get a gun and how lax gun laws are. They were trying to do like an expose about like buying guns in parking lots and how easy it is, but they actually broke a fucking federal gun law on an accident because they didn't know, because, you know, gun laws are weird, where they bought. They sent a guy from like two states over or something like that to buy a rifle in Arizona where he didn't live, and didn't tell the guy that was like selling it to him, you know, because it wasn't like an important detail to them. And then they like put it on the news, and people were like pretty quickly, you know, hey, that actually was sort of super illegal. I don't think anybody ever gets like arrested and tried for that specific crime unless it's like in addition to something else. But like it kind of was one of my kind of early exposures to the bizarreness of federal gun laws and you know, how nobody really like understands 100% of this stuff.
That's right. And I think just with our laws in general, like, right, like we are all breaking so many laws apparently all the time, and it's just a matter of enforcement.
Yeah.
What we're seeing now in our government, where it's like laws don't matter if they're not enforced.
Yeah.
Well, and conversely, laws don't matter if they get to pick which ones are enforced.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if they get to just choose like how they want to enforce them.
The selective enforcement breeds contempt.
The party of law and order now doesn't seem to care at all about OPSEC or any of these, you know, laws that would have any other administration would have been crucified for. But it's just totally fine. Like, how long has it been? It's been, what, 2-3 weeks since Signalgate? And it seems like everybody's forgotten about it now. Like the biggest breach in security in our whole freaking military history.
Forget. Yeah, and it's like, you know, fucking drunken Hegseth on the news. Like, actually, it's not a big deal, ma'am. You know,
yeah,
I text on Signal all the time.
So clearly high. I just saw the video from Easter weekend where he had one sideburn. He had one sideburn.
I don't understand how this dude got hired. I don't even know truly what he does that qualifies him to be in the job. But
it's you need 4 white supremacy tattoos to be SecDef.
Yeah. Yeah. Does he have 4?
He's got 4. Five. Yep. Or does he have 5?
You know, he's got 5 tattoos. I don't know if they're all white supremacists.
For the longest time, I've wanted to make a shirt with one of the J.D. Vance meme faces on it. Specifically the one that looks like a fat Lord of the Rings character, where it's just his beard, he's got big curly hair, and he just looks cherubic.
No, no offense to fat people and Lord of the Rings characters.
Or
I'm sorry to compare.
No offense to Gimli.
We're sorry that we made J.D. Vance look like you.
Gimli wouldn't care.
Gimli never fucked a couch.
Gimli never fucked it. Gimli, yeah, that's 100% accurate there.
Me neither, just for the record.
Just while we're getting that out everybody raise your hand if you have not fucked a couch.
I identify as not having fucked a couch.
Oh. Hell yeah, dude. Oh, this is Josh. He comes in every now and then for a podcast
moral
episode.
Support.
Yeah, he's a
Bold
good friend
DM.
Of mine, and we had him on here because he lost his job, and we feel bad for him.
Oh, thanks.
No,
no, that's not why.
No, he's a lot of fun.
No,
and yeah, otherwise I'm not friends with him because he lost his job, and I feel bad for him.
He's literally my support system right now.
Oh, man. that's
happy
that's
to be.
Hard.
We lean on each other.
Yeah.
You guys are not selling it.
Welcome everyone to the A Better Way to a Podcast. We are your hosts, Andrew and Jordan. I am Jordan. He's Andrew. Today we also have Josh sitting next to me with his hand on my leg. It's great. But more importantly, we have Jack Jones, also known aka Quadzilla on Instagram. Dude has the biggest fucking thighs I've ever seen. Does a bunch of hiking and just an overall really cool guy. I found you on Instagram, I think in the same way that I found that dude, Tizzy Tent, just making really good points of like things that I agreed with politically.
Refutations to alt-right culture war nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. And
he was searching for muscle daddies.
I was searching for muscle daddies.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly. I needed to name someone. My lawyer said I needed to name someone in my will for who I wanted to crush my head to death if I ever have a terminal illness. And all the muscle mommies were taken. So sorry, Jack.
Yeah, that's my number one most DM request. So
anyway, weirdest intro ever. But yeah, dude, you've got like a crazy impressive resume as far as Josh and I were talking about how like we'd always love to hike the Appalachian Trail or at least the Connecticut and Massachusetts portion because that's where we live. But you hiked the Appalachian Trail and then
Pacific Crest Trail.
And then the AT, the PCT, and the CDC, CDT, all in one, CDC, all in 1 year. And then you won an ultra marathon.
Yeah, so I first hiked the Appalachian Trail the first time in 2016. And in 2018, I rode a bike from Mexico to Canada, and then I hiked from Canada back down to Mexico on the CDT. And then 21, I hiked about 2,100 miles, and I ran a 106-miler ultramarathon 2 days after that trail, and I won it. And that at that point, I was like, okay, I think I'm pretty fit now, so let's try something that I didn't think was possible when I first started these hikes, which was called the Calendar Year Triple Crown, which is to hike the AT, PCT, CDT within 1 year, which normally takes people 1 year to hike each of those trails. But so you need to do each trail within 3 months, and it ends up being 7,400 miles. And I did it in, 290 days. It averaged out to 25.5 miles every single day for 290 straight days. But that, you know, the way you do that is you hike like 35, 40 miles a day, depending on terrain, and then you go into town. It's like a 15, 20 mile day. And then you take like a day off every month, and then there's travel day. So it averaged out to 25.5 miles every single day for 290 days. And that was 22. And then last year I hiked the Appalachian Trail again for the third time. So it's been about 20,000 miles of hiking over the last 8 years. And then last year did this crazy stupid thing where we ran up the ski hill in Vermont 122 times. That was over 3 days, and the goal, the whole event is called Iron Hike, and it was 72,000 feet of elevation gain and loss, which was how high Mount Olympus Mons is on Mars, and I think it's the most elevation gain and loss of like any event anywhere, because the entire Appalachian Trail section in New Hampshire, which is the steepest part, right, is like 50,000 some feet of gain and loss. So over 3 days, climbed this mountain up and down 72,000 feet. And that was really, really stupid and ridiculous. But one other person has finished that before. So that's kind of the hiking background.
Yeah. That's insane, man. And you do this because you want to?
Yeah.
I'm tired just listening.
Dude, I'm like, my heart rate is increasing listening.
That's sick, dude.
That's insane.
Yeah, no, I read a book, like Bill Bryson's book, A Walk in the Woods, years back in 2016. And it's like, it sounds like a really fun adventure. You can just live out in the woods. And also it supports my habit of not having a job because it's pretty cheap to live out in the woods.
The elites don't want you to know this, but you could just live in the fucking woods. You could just go onto a mountain and no one will tell you to come down.
Yeah. And honestly, it really is. So like
what are they going to fucking do? Yeah. Call the cops. I'm 72,000 feet in the air.
Yeah,
dude, that's awesome. I mean, and so you're able to live like based on your content on social media, essentially.
Yeah. So for the longest time, like I was always like, I have no idea how I'm going to feed myself after I get off the trail, but I'd always figure it out. And now I'm to the point where I can, yeah, support myself through social media. And I have, you know, good savings from a couple businesses I did a couple
quads.
Years ago. Yeah. And the quads, you know, I sell a lot of OnlyFans where I crush watermelons. So that's a big income stream.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Nice. It's like a modern day Gallagher.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. That, you know, I love hearing stories of people figuring out ways to make things work, make it work, you know, out there in the life that don't revolve around a standard 9-to-5. And especially when it's something that you enjoy doing, you know, we have you who we're interviewing now, believe it or not, in case you were unaware. And then our previous guest, John Jackson. Names were confusing me.
Yeah, Jack Jones and John Jackson.
Right? Yeah, right after another. And I was like, don't get this wrong. Don't introduce him wrong. But so both of you dudes, like I found you on social media and straight up on like vibes only. I was like, we got to have these guys on the show individually because of like your presence on social media, how it made me feel. He's an awesome dude. Like his episode's coming out before this. So like everybody listening to this is already knows who he is, but you know, I love that the internet brings us all together. People from wildly different backgrounds, wildly different, you know, experiences, but we're all kind of trying to, you know, build positivity in our own communities and get people out there doing stuff. So I don't remember if I explicitly saw you make a post about arming minorities. I think I did.
I remember a post about he had a viral post in the firearms subreddit back in the Biden days, and he talked about that and the different attitudes that conservatives have towards like the government. Okay. That was my first, like, you know, because I had been following him. Sorry, don't talk about you like you're not here. Jack, I have been following you for your other takes before that. And then I was like, not only is this guy kind of, you know, in and out of gun culture here, but I remember that fucking post because I was on the firearms subreddit when I was in college when you fucking posted that. Real small world moment.
So yeah, that post, it was crazy. It was a dissident over in Belarus. And there's like 5 KGB agents standing outside his door with, you know, these big battering rams. One of them has a saw. They're like breaking into his very well fortified house. And then it cuts to him. You know, this is video that he took. And then they put it on Belarusian state TV to be like, oh, this is what happens to dissidents. But, you know, he was a dissident. He was a political activist. Yeah. And the KGB was coming in to take him. And he was standing in his doorway with a double over under shotgun. And his wife was there and filming it all because they knew they were going to take him. They were going to kill him. So he said, fuck this. You know, I'm dead already. I'm going to stand up for myself. And they finally, they did such a bad job of breaking into his house, first of all. And they finally, you know, come through and they're like so terrible at CQB. And they're just like going through and then they're yelling at him. And then he fires both rounds from his shotgun and he kills one of the guys, and in the video you can see the guy's blood.
He gives one of them a
massive
barrels,
blood trail. Yeah, he gets the dude, and the post I made was like, this is the stuff that happens in life, in real life, and the U.S. is not immune to this. And imagine if he had, you know, a weapon with 30 round magazine, like he could have taken out all those secret agents, and if he wouldn't have, you know, he still wouldn't have made it. But that's that like the Gulag Archipelago, where you make the organs of the state so afraid that they're not going to come home, they will run out of people much before we run out of citizens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing a story that like culminated, I think, in 2016 of this gentleman down south where he had been pulled over by a state trooper. You know, I don't remember the legality of the actual pulling over, but he had gotten into a fight with the cop, like bit the cop and then driven away. And then fortified himself on his property, put up a sign saying, you know, like, if you send cops in here, they're going to be leaving in body bags. And I think the standoff went on for like 12 years or something like that.
12 years.
Where it was, what?
He never left his property. Dude, so they weren't actively on his property for that long. That's a lot of DoorDash. Yeah. They weren't actively on his property for 12 years, but it was like a you know, like, we'll arrest him when he comes out kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they officially canceled it eventually.
They were like, because, you know what?
And they never sent anyone the in there because they were like, people are going to die if we do that. But that's
because he never killed anybody. He just bit a cop and ran off. And I guess at some point they were like,
which is unfathomably based.
Yeah. We're, you know? Like, so, like, we decided that we're not mad anymore.
Yeah, exactly. The guy got over it.
Yeah.
But even the cop was like, I'm just glad it's over.
Yeah. Right.
But that's the thing. You know, you can only, a law's only as good as its enforcement. And if you make an unjust law hard to enforce, then it essentially doesn't exist. It's like fines. If a law's only punishment is a fine, then it's a law only meant for poor people. Yeah. It's the same thing. You don't see these you know, billionaires and millionaires and or even like celebrities having to deal with the same bullshit that we have to deal with. And
yeah. I also want to
have the money to avoid it.
I want to point out how funny it is that the government, you know, and this is so typical of the perspective of the state, right? They're like, let's put this video of this extremely base dude trying to kill cops with whatever he has on hand, you know, on fucking national TV as a warning. You know, like, it's like this is what you get if you defy us. But actually, like, that's fucking awesome. Like, that's rad. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, what you did is you just showed that people can stand up to your stupid fucking cops.
Yeah. And Jordan, so, like, you know, being a reservist Marine, like, how scary it is to go around a corner knowing there's a guy there with a rifle. And people, you know, on the internet always say, oh, what are you going to do against the U.S. military with their tanks and their planes and everything? And I was like, well, the point that they start dropping JDAMs on U.S. civilians, the government will have lost all legitimacy and it won't exist, you know, in a day. Like, that will just never be a reality within the U.S. But the problem they're going to face is civilians with a rifle. It is so scary. Like, the Uvalde police, they stood outside that school with, what, a couple hundred cops because they were afraid of that one kid with his rifle. So, like, that is the fear that one man with a rifle puts into trained law enforcement, trained soldiers. I remember doing like sim training with CQB, and I did not want to go around that corner. Like, my sergeant yelled at me. He's like, fucking go. I'm like, oh, okay, yes, yeah, sergeant.
Oh, suck. You know?
it's like, I know a guy's there. I don't want to get shot, even by sim rounds. So,
yeah.
You know, it's scary. It is a real deterrent.
Even the possibility that you might get shot, even though you have the capability of shooting back with sim rounds, which are paint bullets for the people who don't know at home, I've never did sim round training with the Marines, but I did it out like in civilian life. It's fucking scary.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts. It hurts way more than a paintball. And when you get shot once, you definitely don't want to get shot again. And it affects how bold you are going around corners, you know, for those who are not used to it. But I never want us to get into the point where citizens are needing to exercise their Second Amendment right to keep laws from getting enforced. But at some point, that's what's going to stop an overly authoritarian government, because they're not going to choose to stop on their own.
Yeah. And I would also like to point out that when it comes to the point of, like, cops raiding, you know, upstanding citizens and them having to defend themselves with rifles in their homes, that's going to be a small part of it, because once it becomes evident that, like, you know, this is what we have to do, we have to defend ourselves from cops, people aren't going to just, like, wait in their houses for the cops to kick in the door and then, like, take a few with them. You know, remember that these cops have homes that they live in. The pilots of the planes that drop JDAMs, they have homes. The people that fly drones, they have homes. They have families, you know, like, you know, we all live next to each other. And, you know, once that starts, like, it's going to get really ugly really fast.
Oh, shit, Andrew, you just got us on so many different lists.
Yeah, but that's, you know, my point is that it's not going to be just like a long list of videos of people fighting cops in their house. You know, it's going to be a few of those, and then it's going to be like a real shit show.
Ah, yeah. The internet is becoming unstable.
Fun stuff.
Oh no.
Yeah, there's a serious lag. Is that a microphone? Is that a very fuzzy microphone?
Yeah, it's my dead mouse microphone. It's what I travel with. It's a little Rode mic that I
nice
actually it can plug into my
I wish I could email you some internet.
Yeah, it's yeah, just
Andrew,
my
upload
speed.
Share some internet.
Yeah, I'm gonna send you some.
You're hoarding it all.
Yeah,
dude. So your first video on your Instagram and one that's been very very popular. You've got a video that talks about martial law survival tips. I find that we're having these conversations more and more frequently now with the shit that's going on. Two things. What experience do you think that you bring to the table to justify making videos like that? And two, I don't actually have a second part.
Why do you think you did it better than Grantham?
We know why he's better than Grantham. Yeah.
So I guess let me go all the way to the beginning, because I think this context will help people understand where I'm coming from and like why I'm so passionate and fired up and angry in all these videos, because I was born in China, Lanzhou, China, which is northern China. It's near the Gobi Desert. And so I was born in 87, and then 89, you know, Tiananmen Square happened in China. And so, you know, thousands of students and unarmed protesters were murdered by the government, by CCP troops. And they shot him with 50 cals. They shot him with, you know, 12 7 millimeters. They shot him with anti-aircraft weapons. They ran over their bodies with tanks to smush their bodies into a paste and then wash the paste down into the sewers so they would hide how many people they killed. And there's accounts of like the Chinese people being so angry, unarmed people, that they charged these lines over and over again. Imagine how angry a crowd has to be to charge troops that are opening fire on them with, you know, anti-materiel rifles, and just seeing, you know, hundreds of people being wiped out in one go, and they're still coming back wave after wave. Like, they were that angry. And there are reports like they killed soldiers too. Like, they you know, they were pissed. And that was the backdrop of, you know, where when I grew up. And my father taught at the university on campus, and he gave a talk in front of thousands of students, talking about freedom and democracy, and like, you know, this is wrong. Tiananmen Square is wrong. And they threw him in prison without due process. And he was in prison for like 2 years before our family was able to get him out. And that was how I ended up coming to the United States, because they didn't think I would have a good life in America being the son of a political dissident. So they, my parents sent me to be adopted over to the US. And so I came over when I was 8 and lost my entire family. Every single person in the world that I knew stepped on the plane. Basically, everybody died. I haven't talked to most of my family for 30 years. I haven't talked to any of my friends. They have no idea where I went. You know, I just disappeared off the face of the planet, as far as they're concerned. And, you know, that's created lifelong trauma and issues. But that's why I am so passionate about this topic, because I am seeing this happen again. You know, I am seeing this happen again. It is replaying in the United States. You know, families right now are being torn apart by this regime. That's the only way I can describe them. They are a regime. They are tearing all these, you know, immigrant families. They're just trying to be here, make a better life for themselves. They have done nothing wrong. They have followed the laws, and yet they're being torn apart. And, you know, these, what, almost 300 people sent to an El Salvadorian concentration camp. Like, what the hell is that? So, oh, I think the question was martial law survival tips. So that's like my background and why I'm so passionate about this. And I think it shows me that this could happen at any time. We are not immune from this. And I think that's my perspective that I'm bringing to people. Like, you guys feel like this can't happen in the United States. So they're like, I've lived through this. Like, this happens. It is happening here. And you guys better get ready for it. But yeah, so like my background from that is spending so much time in the woods, 20,000 miles. It's been like three or four like total years, just, you know, if you count all the months I've been in the woods, that I've lived in the woods in the last 8 years, and just picked up a bunch of little tips doing that. And then also being in the army, doing wildland firefighting. And it's not, you know, it's not anything, there's no secrets. It's like, you need food, you need water, you need shelter, you need to be able to stay warm. Like, that's it. But so I just bring my experience, real life experience. And I think it just helps to be able to tell real life stories. I think people really connect with stories. And I think that's why people connect with my stuff, because I can like tell them what to do and then give them a story of when I almost died at 12,000 feet in the mountains of Colorado. And be like, this is why you need rain gear, you know?
I think it's crazy, you know, that for one, you know, experiences like yours exist, and people hear about this kind of thing all the time because the internet exists and you can literally Google it. And you still have people out there on the internet who have who read a couple of Karl Marx books and think that all of the information regarding Tiananmen Square is Western propaganda, yeah. And none of it actually happened the way that we've been taught. Meanwhile, you have, you know, firsthand accounts and secondhand accounts from people who were there saying, no, that's literally what happened. Yeah. This is why authoritarianism is bad, because this is what it could lead to. And then you've got both people on both sides of the aisle. Now you have people supporting Trump saying, this isn't fascism, don't worry about it. And you have people, you know, who are far, far left saying, Tiananmen Square wasn't, you know, that's also not fascism because it's, you know, colored red. Because
the students were evil capitalists.
Exactly. And it's just wild how, you know, I talk about the horseshoe theory a lot, and I don't necessarily think that, I think depending on, it's all nuanced, but
I don't think ideologically the left and the right in a definitive sense come together.
Yeah,
but I think that a lot of
authoritarianism on both sides ends up with very similar results. Yeah, and I and some people just have a much harder time of acknowledging that. So I just, you know, hearing your story and the shit you've been through, man, it's incredibly sobering when put up against the backdrop of what's going on now, and wondering, you know, at what point the people who are excusing our current government's actions will get to where they're like, holy shit, this is actually, now this is fascism, if at all.
Yeah.
You know, what point, like, are trans people going to have to be round up and strung up in the square, or like, is it going to happen before that? Or do these people not care?
Yeah,
you know, that's the crazy thing to think about.
One thing that brought to mind is that what we're truly dealing with is class warfare, right? The real issue throughout history is, you know, the very wealthy waging warfare against everybody else. And then they divide it into left versus right, you know, communists versus fascists and whatever and all this. But ultimately it is class warfare. And like, I have to remind myself all this all the time because it is so easy to get caught up in it, where I get mad at MAGA and Trump and whatever else. But like, it's the billionaires. Like, it is the billionaires. It has always been the billionaires. And that is the root of all of these issues. And they're spreading all of that division. And okay, I got on my rant about billionaires and I forgot the actual meat of your question, Jordan. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
It was more of a statement. Just, you can go, Andrew.
No, just talking about how, like, sometimes people get so entrenched in these ideological lines that they're not willing to look back in history and criticize when you know, it's like leftists refusing to criticize the failures of past leftist movements or the atrocities that leftist governments have committed, you know, and
or meanwhile, you know, like conservatives seeing the things that are going on right now and us saying, this is very similar to like 1930s Germany, and them saying, no, absolutely not. It couldn't be farther from it.
I think sometimes that's less of a political thing and more of you know, they don't want to like betray their community, you know, or they don't want to, they don't want to
really
separate.
It's a tribal thing. Like, it really is a tribal thing. People get caught up in their tribe and then they have to defend their tribe so strongly because a lot of people like comments all the time, like, oh, you're just a paid George Soros paid Democrat shill. I'm like, how do you know I'm a Democrat? Like, you don't know. Like, I was for Ron Paul when I was in college. I was libertarian, and then, you know, I was right leaning because I grew up in Missouri and I was in the army. And, you know, now I'm much more left leaning because I have empathy now and I care about other people. But, you know, for a long time I was right leaning, and it's like, you know, just because I'm against Trump doesn't mean necessarily that I'm anything else, but you have to pit us against these tribal roles. And I think, you know, it's a very concerted effort by the billionaires to pit each other, pit tribes against each other, so the tribes don't unite and cut off the heads of the billionaires.
Yeah, they kind of convince you that no, this is your problem. It's not me, you know. It's not.
I laugh constantly because, like, whenever we start talking about class warfare and classism and things like that, like, I'm not a communist. I know that. I don't know what I am, but I know I'm not a communist. But as soon as we start having these conversations, I feel like I'm just going to, like, raise my hammer and sickle flag,
yeah,
and storm the White House.
Well, no, I mean, that's and this has come up before too. Like, I'm like a literal, actual, practical capitalist, but, like, also I don't like billionaires, and also I don't like the, you know, the way people, like, buy access to the government, you know? And so it's like, yeah, like, you don't have to be stuck in this tribe. Like, you could be one thing and then realize, like, you know, hey, you know, this is not, like, this part of what I thought was my identity is not working. And I don't have to, like, adhere to that because that's, like, a betrayal of my soul or something.
Yeah, like, where I'm at now is I really want to keep pressing this message. Like, I am pro-humanity. I'm pro-empathy. I'm pro rights and freedoms and opportunity for everyone. And, like, because I think it is really important. I have definitely fallen into the trap of being too reactive. And I think, you know, if all we do is react to this regime, we will lose. Like, we will absolutely lose. And in my own life, I found how I've been able to accomplish the things I've been able to accomplish and fulfill my dreams is because I've had a vision for what I wanted, and I went after that vision, and it wasn't just reacting to the bullshit that's happening to me. And I think that's really the key here for people. It's like,
yeah,
we need to have a vision for where we want to go. And that vision is creating a country and a world that is just pro-humanity, you know, pro-civil rights, pro-liberties, pro-freedom, pro-opportunity, you know, pro-labor movement, pro, you know, all these things. And then we'll just focus on that, and all these politicians, the billionaires, all this stuff will just, they'll just fall by the wayside. They will just not even have a place to exist in the society that we create. And, like, you know, that gets rid of all these labels of communists and whatever else.
I agree, man. And, well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I say constantly the 24-hour news cycle ruined this country because if you constantly dangle the carrot in front of the horse never knows what's past that. And in the same way that you said that you have a vision and that's what you aim for, if you're constantly distracted by the day-to-day, by the newest drama from the government, the newest drama from your celebrities, Instagram trolls and whatever, you're not focused on the end goal. And as a result, you know, you're caught up and you don't make any progress. Meanwhile, the people who can look at the macro, look at all this in a macro scale, are making leaps and bounds towards what they want, which is to make more money. To, you know, the fact that COVID was the single largest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the upper class in documented history is insane. And that's because we were so focused on COVID and staying healthy and not getting our family and friends sick. And these people were like, well, like, which stock am I going to invest millions and billions into?
It's not even just like people who are paying attention to the stock market, but you've got guys with access to policymakers saying, you know, this is the kind of loan that I need you to give small businesses. Never mind that I'm a giant fucking mega corporation and I'm going to gobble up 90% of the fucking resources that you dedicate to it. But yeah, so it's just like levels on levels of class warfare, I guess.
Yeah, it's goofy, man. It's
goofy.
Yeah, that's usually how I sum it up. It's fucking goofy. I wish more people understood that. It's goofy. It's like, goofy. If you look at
whatever,
something,
dude.
This super fucking complicated thing, and you're just going to spiral out of control emotionally on it. It's fucking goofy. That's so goofy.
A coping mechanism.
It is a coping mechanism. It's a super coping mechanism because I have a Robinhood account and I think I'm getting ahead in life. And then I look at Nancy Pelosi's fucking portfolio and I want to kidnap a governor or something like that. Just kidding. That's a joke. That's a joke.
Dude, no, I wrote about this like today. I wrote about this how fake, you know, the economy and money is. And now I'm going to really sound like a communist, you know, blue-haired hippie leftist or whatever. But really, think about it. Like, all of our currency, all of our money, it is as real as Monopoly money. And I wrote about how I was on the Appalachian Trail and this lady came in with her daughter and they didn't have enough food. And so she was like, hey, can I buy some food off of you guys? And this old dude with this old like southern accent was like, lady, your money ain't no good here. And he gave her a candy bar, and then we all gave her some of our food begrudgingly. And you know, the lesson there is like, it doesn't matter how much money you have. If you're in the middle of the woods and there's no shops around, you can't buy anything. Your money is no good. And it's like, if our store shelves are empty, your money is no good.
Right.
And I think about all the people in Ukraine who, you know, they had their houses and they had their retirements, and now Russia comes in and just blows up all their buildings. Like, you know, like that is how fragile our futures are. Yet people spend their entire lives trying to build their 401ks and build our IRAs and build a retirement, thinking that this is this very real, tangible security, when it only works when our system exists. And right now our system is collapsing, guys. And so, you know, like it is not that real.
And that's it's really fun having to explain money to people on all over the spectrum.
It's not.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like interest. it's the third kind of fun. Yes. So, I mean, like money is real in a sense, right? It's not like a mineral, you know, it's not like gasoline, you know, money is a thing that we made, but it's only useful in the sense that people trust it and want it and spend it on things. And if you don't have all of that together, you know, it's gone. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like, you know, some fucking proto civilization in Europe eons ago, somebody was like, I've got leeks and I want your donkey. And the guy with the donkey's like, you know, yeah, I want to get rid of this donkey, but I don't want any fucking leeks. What are we going to do? What are we going to do, man? And then somebody figured out that, you know, it's like, well, you know, I mean, everybody likes these little fucking, you know, chunks of gold. So maybe we could just start trading with that. And so it's like, yeah, you could get your donkey, even if the dude didn't want your leeks. That's money. That's all it is. You know,
Andrew, if there was a single, like, this is what a bunch of white guys on a podcast sound like quote ever.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying it's like,
no, but you, yeah,
but good yeah, point. But it's like, you know, good if they, if they come in and they fucking blow up your banks and you can't get food and, you know, like, yeah, it's like your money's not going to help you. If the regime decides to clamp down on the flow of money and merchandise, like, yeah, you could save your whole life and it could be gone in an instant because, you know, oops, fascism.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's like a very privileged, like, take to be like, oh, money doesn't matter, you know, because like it absolutely matters when you don't have money. Right. And like, most of my life, I have not had money and I've been very stressed out.
Right.
But I think, yeah. And the point that we're making is that it's, you know, it's a very created thing and it's not nearly as solid as we like to think it is. And it can be taken away in a second. And I think coming from a dirtbag background, like, I think that really was the point I was trying to drive across to people. It's like, yeah, you know, don't worry about it so much. Like, don't, yeah.
Well, and specifically too, to your point, if you are not taking action now because you're worried about your money, you know, you're like, I don't want to be a revolutionary because I got to save for my kids' college. Like, if that's what you're worried about, buddy, I got bad news for you. You know, the other thing can also make that money evaporate. It's not going to, if you're not a billionaire, that money is not going to buy you safety and access to policymakers.
Yeah. Oh my God. I've been so frustrated at all of these, you know, outdoor influencer people because like nobody, right. So I've been making hiking videos up until March when I got into my deep, long depression. And then I've started making videos about the regime. And, you know, when I first started, I got so much pushback and hate, and I've mostly blocked those people. And people are like, well, don't make hiking political, stick to your hiking content. And like, still nobody else that I know in the outdoor space is really talking about any of this, you know, silence. They're just fucking off to the woods, all happy. Look at me. This is my hike. I'm going on my through hike. And I'm like, guys, like literally. Like your country is being taken over by a fascist authoritarian. And like, okay, maybe you're going to have your account still, but like, do you really want to be an influencer in Nazi Germany? Like that's who you would rather choose to be an influencer in Nazi Germany than speak out now. Like you're more worried about your followers than, you know, than our country being taken over and losing your freedoms and your First Amendment rights, Second Amendment rights, losing due process, losing all of this. Like, what's more important to you is that you can continue to make $3,000 with your shitty brand deals. Like that's what our priorities are, guys.
Well, but critically, you can make that money now, but not later. You know, like what you're chasing after, if this country goes down the drain, you know, that's a very short term fucking benefit.
Absolutely. And like just most recently, it's been coming out that, yeah, like Trump and Project 2025 are doing exactly what they said they're going to do. They're pushing through plans now to basically sell off large swaths of our public land. So, yeah, you guys, you're going to be great making your content when there's no more public lands, and every viewpoint that you look across is going to be a freaking oil drill and, you know, strip mining.
Yeah. Watch me hike up this pipeline access road.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, you know, there are really very real ramifications for these things. Like, I remember seeing when the Park Service was being gutted, there were trails that were closed to the public because they didn't have enough people to maintain them. And, you know, that's something where it's like, okay, your hobby now is being bled on by politics. And at that point, you know, it's almost like you have I don't have any hobbies, I think, that are not political. I guess I play video games, but, like, you know, guns, we're always used to being political here because guns are inherently political. And especially when you start trying to argue that gun rights are, you know, trans rights, or gun rights are the, you know, every impoverished person has the right still to have the means to protect themselves. It gets doubly political because you piss off two groups of people. Yeah. But, you know, the second you see things like that happening, that your hobby that you've said for so long should not be political is now being affected by the government and policies that the government has pushed, I feel like you have a duty to respond to that.
Yeah, no, I totally, totally agree. And it's, you know, and that was what I started making videos about. But very quickly after that, they started snatching the students off the street. And I haven't made a video about outdoors, you know, outdoor politics for like 2 months now, because even that seems like trite and inconsequential when people are being disappeared into concentration camps in El Salvador. And that's my like bafflement, and like, how can anyone in this country watch people being, you know, rounded up without due process, sent away, and you're just living life as if nothing is happening? Like, what kind of cognitive dissonance do you have to live like that? And I honestly, like, I'm baffled, and it makes me angry, deeply angry.
You know, you said it earlier, and what we were talking about is it is the people who have control over all the media and what, I'm not saying like the lizard people who have control over the media, the people who own the media, you know, corporations and billionaires constantly pit us against each other to the point where we're so tribalized that we will see atrocities being committed against people who we think we disagree with and make excuses for it, rather than looking at them as a human being and saying, like, wow, this person's rights are being trampled. Fuck constitutional rights. Like, their rights as a human being are being violated. And how do you think, because I'm constantly torn on this. Like, I truly believe that there's nuance, and I believe in reaching across the figurative aisle and trying to meet people where they're at. But then there are also sometimes where, like, somebody on Facebook recently was like, well, the Jews control the media and yada, yada, yada. And I just said, dude, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
The only appropriate response there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But what do you think is the way forward at this point? Like, do you think people can be saved and people can still be reached in order to see the forest beyond the trees? Or do you think that it's time to go on the defensive and start working on our own communities?
Honestly, so what I'm thinking now, and actually I had this thought at my favorite grocery store. I'm in Berlin, in Germany right now, Aldi, favorite grocery store of all time. And I had the thought, I was like, really what we need now is create a, you know, left-leaning, liberal, whatever you want to call it, movement that is strong. Like, I am tired of this weak, democratic, pussy-footed, like, oh, we'll just maintain the status quo and we'll be nice to everybody and we'll let everybody walk over us because we need to be the nice people. And like, fuck that. We need to tell these people exactly what they are. That's what I've been doing. I've been telling them, you guys are fucking traitors, and we're going to remove you from office, and we're going to try every single one of you for being the treasonous traitors that you are. And that is where I am at, because I think 20-25% or whatever of hardcore Trump voters, like, they're gone. They're lost to us. They are living in a completely separate reality bubble. They're completely detached from reality. When you give them truth, they say this is fake news. They say you're a paid Democrat, Soros, shill. Like, they just, they cannot believe reality. So I'm like, I don't know, you know, what to do here. And it's like, let's not waste our time trying to reach people that have chosen, willingly chosen, to live in a separate reality detached from this true reality. And like, our job now is to rally still the other 80% of people, the majority of people, and really wake up all those people that are just detached from politics, you know, but they haven't necessarily drank the Kool-Aid, the Trump Kool-Aid, but they're just they don't see, like, oh, why do I need to pay attention to politics? Like, those are the people we need to reach and be like, hey, you're about to lose every single one of your rights, and some of your family and friends are going to be sent to camps and disappeared and murdered. Like, that's what's happening, guys. And like, that's where we're at. And I think, like, that's really where I'm at. I was like, I have zero room, and I have a very combative personality. Like, I'm training Muay Thai right now. I want to do a couple Muay Thai fights this year. And, you know, being in the army, all this stuff, like I spent my whole life arguing with people on the internet. So that's where I'm at. And I'm just angry, and I want to, like, we need to be strong, you know, no more of this weak conciliatory bullshit. We need to be strong. We need to tell it exactly like it is. And, like, you guys are traitors. You are a cancer to this country. You need to be cut out.
And that's, like, the least that you could do, right? Is like say it, right? Like, say it with your chest, say it out loud. And I see, like, these images from early on of, like, you know, there's this one picture of, like Doge went into some federal building and was, like, you know, fucking around with shit, putting in their flash drives and sticking their fingers where it doesn't belong. And there's this, like, one guy, this one, like, fucking skinhead dude that's, like, standing guard outside.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
this army of Democrat politicians descends on him, and they're like, move. And he's like, no. And they're like, ah. And just that for an hour. And I was like, fucking push him. Push him out of the way.
Be like the South Koreans. Like, take, like, over the fucking parliament. Like, grab the guns of the special operations dudes and push through.
And I just, like, this, and you know, I believe in civility, and I believe in solving your problems with words, and violence as a last resort. But there's, like, levels, right? Where, like, restraining a guy and moving him is not the same thing as bashing his brains out, right? Like, saying violence is a last resort does not disqualify you from using a little bit of force when appropriate to gain access to the place where the fascism is happening. I don't understand it. And, like, that's the stuff that really pisses me off, is, like...
Like, the point, what you make me think of is, what has happened is MAGA, you know, and I hesitate, because it's not conservatives. It really is this, like, crazy far right brand of MAGA, Christian nationalism, white supremacy. Like, they are the real issue, and they have weaponized the tolerance. They have weaponized tolerance against the rest of the world. Like, you know, the rest of politics has been like, yeah, we shouldn't be violent. We shouldn't drown people's voices out. We should hear people out. We should let them speak their mind. Like, this is how democracy works. This is how civil society works. But these people have learned that, hey, we can weaponize this, and we can use this against them. And we can, if we're violent and we're loud and we're rude, then we will win. And so it's like, that's the playing field we're on, guys. This is a street fight. This is a war. This is a brawl. And you can't, you know, you're not going, it's, the rules have changed, and everybody else needs to recognize that.
Yeah, for sure.
I hear you. You know, and this is one of the things that comes up a lot whenever we talk about nuance and whenever we talk about reaching across the aisle, in the sense that, you know, like you said, I think that the vast majority of the people who are excusing these things and the vast majority of the people who are taking part in them are the minority of conservatives, only because I my job, I'm a firefighter, we're very 50-50. Most conservatives I know when the news comes on and there's some batshit crazy thing happening on TV, they're like, this is fucking nuts. Like, most of them, we still have the crazies, but there's like two people in the department of 100, which I think is a pretty, you know, you can make the argument is maybe not a accurate sample size of the country, but I think it's pretty accurate for like our class of people, which whatever that is. But, you know, two people are like, no, that's absolutely, they will make excuses regardless of what it is. And the rest of the conservatives are like, that's kind of fucking nuts. Like, man, they'll kind of like shake their head and they'll be like, I don't know. They're not, you know, liberal or leftist and condemning it, but they're like, they're certainly not in agreement. And when people typically bring up the tolerance paradox of like, you know, yes, we should tolerate different views, but if you tolerate the wrong views for too long, then they take hold. I fear that they are conflating the extremists with the people they simply disagree with. And as a result, by silencing the people who we just disagree with and who are not fucking crazy, push them closer to the crazies, and then we end up inadvertently shooting ourselves in the foot. And I think the media does that intentionally. I think politicians do that intentionally. And, you know, I don't know how to explain to someone, you know, how to eloquently navigate that topic with, you know, because I can't do it sometimes. Yeah. Every now and then I feel like, you know, I feel like the internet version of road rage, where I just want to fucking scream at someone.
Yeah.
like the dude on the internet this morning. I was like, go fucking shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But we're in a very strange time right now. And like, I feel like we need a hard reset, but I don't know what that is, nor do I want to encourage it.
Yeah. And I think what you bring to mind is that like different people have different skill sets, right? And like I brought up, like, I'm very confrontational and combative, and I like to argue with people on the internet. Like, I am not the person to build that bridge. Like, my job is to like rally all the other people who are so pissed off and be like, hey, you know, like, my job is to like rally the troops. And maybe somebody else's job who is much better at bridge building and seeing different perspectives and has much more patience than I do, like, their job will be to bridge that. Because I think there is a good amount of like people who voted for Trump based on truly like economic reasons and like two Second Amendment reasons and just, you know, being conservative in general, but they still believe in the rule of law, in the Constitution, in, you know, due process, in civil liberties. Like, those are very fundamental conservative values when you think about it. And I think it's a matter of they're being fed, right, just a different set of information, how Trump believed that the Supreme Court 9-0 case was in his favor. Like, that's just a separate reality. Like, if we can't agree on facts, that's a real issue, right? So I don't know how it's going to be like a really long, difficult, arduous process. But yeah, I guess that's where I'm at. It's like, there's a very clear and present danger that we are all facing right now, and that's my focus. And then once we get past that, we really do need to address the fact that people are living in separate realities. And I think there's a very, very dangerous brand of white supremacy, you know, that's been brewing in this country really since the Civil War. And it's, I think it's the mask has come off now, and I've been researching it a whole bunch, and it is some super, super scary, dark stuff.
Yeah, and that's the goofy thing. There's that word again. I'm gonna use that word a lot. Goofy. There's the thing, you know, where there has always been an element of white supremacy in this country. But, you know, when we had Clinton in office, when we had Bush in office, when we were distracted by 9/11, people could conveniently push it aside. The few cherry-picked examples that would show up in left-leaning news media outlets, and they'd say, well, that's not, like, come on, when was the last time you saw a Klansman? But now, you know, those events are happening more and more frequently, not because people are, I mean, there might be some overlap, but not necessarily just because people are like being converted to that. But those people have always been around. They just feel more comfortable now coming out of the woodwork. And I feel like when you see things like that, that is the canary in the coal mine. When you see people literally waving swastika flags over an overpass that is getting, you know, thousands of eyes a minute, they feel comfortable enough assuming not one of those cars driving underneath them is going to get off the exit and kill them for being Nazis. That is the canary in the coal mine, that shit is getting bad.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's like, I just shared a video of the clip from SLC yeah. Punk of them just beating the shit out of Nazis. Like I used to be of like the.
I used to be a Nazi.
No. Shut the fuck up, Josh. Dude, this dude says three things and they're all super inflammatory and gonna get me in trouble.
I'm here to tank the podcast.
Remember that one opinion you had about the yeah.
Just kidding, everyone.
I can't even say the opinions I have about my own people because people are gonna cancel me. But you know, I truly think it is like the canary in the coal mine that shit like that is allowed to happen without serious mm-hmm. physical repercussions. Because like my grandfather fought in Normandy. My grandfather shot fucking Nazis in the face.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying go outside and I'm not even going to say what I'm not saying.
Well, you know, I love this because it's like not only did your grandfather shoot Nazis, but he also shot people who maybe weren't ideologically Nazis, but still took the job of fighting on the Nazi side, you know? Yeah. And he shot them.
Yeah.
Because he
shot them. They all, listen, but that was the thing. It's like they were all Nazis to him. You know, we're not in a war. We're not in a side versus side physical confrontation yet, but you know, like there are people making excuses for people who unironically would like to see certain races and yeah. certain types of people not mm-hmm. exist anymore.
To circle back full force to the start of the conversation, like the people that are, if it comes to it in the United States, the people that will be manning the battering rams, breaking down the door, it is not primarily going to be law enforcement or active duty military, as people mistakenly fear. It's going to be our own brand of brown shirts, which will be made up of white supremacist militias. And yeah, I've been doing a pretty deep dive on this because I realized I had this memory pop up that one of the guys in my own National Guard unit, he was arrested down in Florida for training this American Front white supremacy militia. And he got arrested for that. And he eventually ratted out all those other guys. And 12 of the American Front people, they got charged with tons of felonies for, like, they were making ricin, like that poison that was in Breaking Bad. They were making ricin. They were shooting into dwellings. I don't know what that was about. But they were like planning a race war. They were trying to start, they were going to start a race war and then go kill a bunch of minorities. And yeah. this was a dude that I knew in my own National Guard. And it was so hilarious because the news article said, oh, he trained them in hand-to-hand combat and bladed weapons use. And I'm like, this guy was so fat and out of shape. He knew nothing about any of that. Like, no one in the Army is taught how to use a bladed weapon, you know? Like, it's so ridiculous. And I'm just picturing him, yeah. this, like, big, fat, doofy guy. I'm like, oh, and this is how you stab a person with a knife, you know? But regardless, like, they thought they wanted his expertise on how to kill people with bladed weapons because that was part of their plan in order to incite this race war. And like, in my research, I discovered there was this, Minuteman militia group that was patrolling the southern border. And these groups have been doing this for 20 years now, patrolling the southern border, these armed militias just patrolling the southern border. And this group, they dressed up as U.S. Marshals and Border Patrol. They came to this house. They thought this guy was a drug dealer and their plan was to rob him and kill him. So they came to his house and they claimed these are just white supremacy yeah. guys. They knocked on their door and they said, hey, we're U.S. Marshals. There's an escaped prisoner. We need to come into your house and search. And so the family, it's a Hispanic family, let him into the house. And then the husband was looking like, he was like, oh, these guys don't look right. And he asked one of these guys, like, hey, why is your gun taped? And the guy took out his pistol, shot him in the head. And then he shot his 9-year-old daughter in the head. They murdered the father, murdered the 9-year-old daughter. And then the wife was asleep in the bedroom. Yeah. She picked up her own pistol and she fought these guys off. She shot one of them in the leg or the gut or something, and then they ran off. Of course, you know, these cowards, as soon as they encountered resistance, they ran off, and two of them got the death penalty for that. This was in 2009. Mm-hmm. So I think it's Flores. If you Google like 2009 Flores home invasion, 9-year-old.
Why have I not heard of this?
Crazy.
I remember being in college in Arizona and reading about that, and that was when I was like first getting into guns on my own.
Yeah, but there are literally, you know, tens of thousands of these people, probably, I don't know, probably more than that in the United States, that they're not arming themselves for self-defense. They're not arming themselves because they're afraid that the government is coming or something. They are arming themselves because they want a race war. Like they are gleefully awaiting the start of the race war. And all it's going to take is for, I mean, I feel like that's what's happening here. This narrative being built of immigrants, you know, these murdering, raping, terrible, illegal immigrants. I think like that's the stage being set. And at some point he's going to tell them like, hey, Proud Boys, hey, 3%ers, like go nuts. Like we're going to deputize you. You're going to have legal authority and then go round them up. Go do whatever you want. And that's when people are going to need their guns.
Yeah. Brown shirt time. Yeah, for sure.
How do you as a goddamn libtard, how do you reach the people who are so staunchly anti-gun that, you know, they subscribe to Giffords, they subscribe to the Bloomberg groups, and they're voting for more stricter gun laws that'll only be used against, you know, marginalized groups trying to arm themselves. How do you reach those people and say like, listen, these people exist.
Yeah.
These people exist for the sole purpose. Their lifelong mission is to destroy a race of people or multiple races of people. You need guns to defend yourselves against those people. How do you, because that's what I've been struggling with for years, getting that's more of the outreach that we do here. We don't do as much outreach of like trying to convince conservatives, or I'm not just saying conservatives, but like transphobic people, bigots, that, you know, trans people need guns too. We are trying to reach the more reasonable people on the anti-gun side. Yeah. Spend more effort doing that to show them like, hey, listen, like not everybody leads as privileged of a life as you do. Some people need firearms to protect themselves. And honestly, that number is growing by the day with the crazier things get. What's your take on the best way to reach those people other than just like shoving shit in their face and being like, this is what you voted for?
Yeah. I mean, that is a really interesting question because I've been thinking about that a lot. I'm like, I wonder if California, Washington are regretting all of their ridiculous, you know, assault weapons, because you can't even buy an AR-15 in Washington state now. And I've had a lot of people message me saying like, I can't buy an AR-15 in Washington. What should I buy? And like, it's really crippling the self-defense of their citizens when Trump might be sending in his brown shirt goons, right, specifically to these states. Yeah, that's a really good question. I almost feel like it's like too late now. Like things, you know, like these laws have done the damage, right? Like people in Washington can't buy the weapons that they need to defend themselves. But maybe the next time, maybe after all this is over, all of these people, because I am seeing so many comments on my own videos where like, I've been a lifelong Democrat, liberal, whatever, and my opinion on guns has finally changed. Like I finally get it. I understand, you know, why the conservatives always said we need to protect ourselves from the government. Like it finally clicks in their mind, and it almost feels like it was a little bit late, but you know, I think, long-winded way of me saying, all I'm doing is putting this out there, because I do feel like when I even look at the things I make versus what other people make, I am very much focused on things like the threat from white supremacy, the threat of, you know, troops killing civilians in the streets. And I feel like a lot of, you know, left liberal people still don't want to touch those subjects. And I think it is because, you know, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in the Army. Like I'm much more in contact with these cultures. Like I was in my unit, neo-Nazi, Riley. You can Google it. Missouri National Guard Specialist Riley, neo-Nazi. He was literally in my unit. I you know, ate MREs with the dude. So like I'm much closer in contact with these people. So I see the danger of these people, whereas someone that's
lived ribs with the dude
in a bubble, you know, in California, they probably just don't have the same proximity to the danger, so they don't see that. Because I worked in Idaho too, that was the Sawtooth Hotshots, and Idaho is just full of white supremacists. Like it is scary up there, and if you're not up there in there, you don't realize how scary and dangerous these people are. And I guess that's my, what I'm doing is just, because I have, you know, a lot of hiker, a lot of just very left leaning people watching my stuff and I bring it up and people are like, oh my God, I didn't never knew stuff like this existed. You know, I think it is now. Like what's happening now is going to create, if we hopefully, and I do believe that we will get through this because every fascist regime falls and the US has such a strong culture of like freedom, the Constitution, independence, and gun ownership in a way that no other country that was taken over or attempted to be taken over by authoritarian has, and the incompetence of this regime, right? All those factors, I think, I am very hopeful.
Yeah.
And I think once we get through this, you know,
I
think hopefully that will create a whole generation of, yeah, much more liberal gun owners, right? Because I do think, like, right, I think it is crazy that I can go to a Walmart parking lot after messaging a guy on the internet and buy like an AR-15 or a handgun or whatever with no due process, just him messaging like, hey, are you a criminal? And be like, no, I'm not, dude. And be like, okay, give me cash. Like, that seems crazy to me, right? So it's like, yeah, I think common sense, right? Like effective gun laws, maybe we can talk about that. But like,
no, that why, sounds why awesome. That we, sounds awesome.
Yeah. I wish we could do that here.
Yeah.
Why are we banning, you know, a flash hider? That does not make an AR-15 less deadly. Why can't I have a foregrip? You know, what's the difference between a stock and a freaking brace?
Yeah.
You know, that does not make that round kill me any less.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wish that was the conversation. Like, I wish those were the conversations about gun control. Sorry, Josh, what were you saying?
Well, no, I think to everyone's point, too, that there is one thing, and hear me out, that this administration has done well, is created a place for this sort of fetishized version of America for these groups, these outlier groups, to exist. And that, I think, also, on the opposite side, they say, oh, this will never, you know, happen. This will never, you know, it doesn't, for them, it's not a fantasy for them, so it doesn't exist. Well, on the other side, it is a fantasy that does exist, and that's what is allowing it to fester so much.
Now we can be like, see? See?
Yeah.
I told you so.
Told you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, inadvertently proving our point that these people are out there, that by encouraging them to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
Not the way that I say this all the time. This is not the way that I wanted to get more progressive gun owners.
Yeah.
But if it happens to be this, if it has the same effect, then it's an ultimate win for the people who do end up becoming gun owners.
Eventually.
Yeah. And eventually. I think one little point I want to add from growing up in China, like the people were so terrified. I remember I was 2 years old, right? And I repeated some phrase that I heard my father saying, and everybody, like, you know, there were like a couple of neighbors around, and like they were mortified when they heard me say that. And like the level of fear that civilians had in China, I just cannot describe. Like, we have never seen that. Like, no one in the US understands that level of fear that your neighbor is going to turn you in and then you're going to disappear. I think that, because I have always been staunchly Second Amendment, and that turns, you know, I have so many arguments with my liberal friends.
Even that too.
Yeah. And it's friggin' because of that, it's because like the people, the government can become so scary and so tyrannical when you have nothing, no way of defending yourself. And I never want to be in that position again.
Yeah.
I don't blame
you. I don't want you to be in that position.
No. I was going to say, I'm glad you're here, but you're in Germany.
Yeah.
I'm glad you came over here eventually. I've only ever landed in Germany, but it seems like a pretty cool place.
It is. It is. It's beautiful. The cost of living is surprisingly low. Like, I bought a week of groceries, and it was like 60 euros. So it's wild. I really enjoy it over here.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah. It's getting a little hairy over here.
Yeah. You can ride a bike around the whole city. It's really nice.
That's sick. That's something that, like, you know, the Western mind cannot even comprehend. Is having like pedestrian accessible cities.
We waiting?
Sorry, there's a, I don't know. Is that just a lag?
It might be a lag.
Oh,
okay. Well, I'd say the uncertainty, we don't want to step on each other's toes. So it's like, we're all like waiting to see if somebody starts talking.
Nobody's talking because we're like, well, somebody's definitely talking right now. Yeah, we just don't hear or see yet. Because of the lag.
I tell my wife I have bad service on my phone. Just say every other word and then hang up.
No.
Life hack, you just turn on airplane mode on your phone and then it says call dropped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I ever do that with my wife, because I love my, not saying you don't love your wife, Josh, but here we go.
It's a spectrum.
Anyway, it's a spectrum. We were talking, my wife and I were talking about our dogs yesterday. Speaking of spectrum of love and hate, I love my dogs, but I don't always like them. Mm-hmm. My Chihuahua is kind of a cunt. he can be the sweetest dog in the world, but he just fucking growls all the time. And there's some times where, like, you're cooking and the kid is screaming because she's upset and you're trying to placate her and give her, like, cook her food. And you step on the dog because the dog is underneath your feet trying to get the food that you're trying to make for the toddler. And you just want to punt a dog, like this particular dog. And I would never do that because I love my dog and I'm not, you know, cruel to animals. But the desire is there. 100%.
You just want to get your point across.
I just want to get my point across. Yeah, you know, and that's no better way to do that than physical abuse. That's one thing that we've learned as parents. And our parents have learned, and you know, that's how you develop a strong, mentally healthy child.
There's the promo.
Yeah, there's the promo. Beat your kids. It works.
Hard men create hard children.
Yeah, exactly.
Jack, are you sheltering in Germany right now, or are you just on vacation?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that was the point I was trying to get to when I got sidetracked talking about bikes, is that, yeah, I do not feel safe coming back to the United States. So I was on a planned trip. Like, I was going to hike the Appalachian Trail, and then I was going to live in Southeast Asia. And that's what I've been doing the last couple of years. I'll hike, and then I'll live in Southeast Asia, because life, honestly, is so much better in, like, Southeast Asia or Europe if you can work online. And that's most people's issues, right? You can't work from abroad. But if you can, life is so much easier, so much better, in my opinion. So that was my plan. And then the election happened and all this bullshit started happening. And then I started speaking out. And within, it was less than 2 weeks, I want to say 10 days of when I posted my first video speaking out against the administration, against the regime, I had my Trusted Travelers program, my global entry, revoked. And I just want to be very clear, like, this was not a scam. Wow. Like, they have your email, right? So they sent me an email and said, there's been an update to your Trusted Traveler. So I went into the website, logged in to secure.gov, used my two-factor authentication, and there's a letter sitting in my account. And it says, I'm sorry to inform you, but Global Entry is a privileged program and your Global Entry has been revoked. And the reason listed was you do not meet program eligibility requirements. Now, bear in mind, I have served as an infantryman. I've served on a federal hotshot crew. All those require FBI background checks. So I passed all those FBI background checks. I had to pass another one to get my Global Entry like 2 years ago. I had to go for an in-person interview. All of those cleared. I've not had any, you know, any law problems, nothing in my status has changed, except I started speaking out against the regime. And I think what happened is they're using these AI dragnets, like the same way they have been canceling student visas and the same way they've been, you know, like they flat out said that we are using surveillance of social media for people immigrating for student visas. Like, I have that screenshot saved somewhere of the the INS website. They have flat out said that. So, you know, like 100%, you know, they're using Palantir AI, these AI systems to monitor people. And I think that's what's happened, is that AI said, hey, this guy is a political dissident. He's speaking out against Trump. He has a decent, you know, decently large following. And okay, and we cross-matched him to this registry in TTP. So, you know, easy, you know, there's no due process needed, revoke his TTP. And that's what happened. So now I'm waiting on, I filed a FOIA and FOIA request, and then we'll see what comes of that. But like, because of that, I don't feel safe coming back into the United States. And I have to be pretty careful in my wording of this, but I will not be sent to a camp alive. I have made that decision. So, you know, so I'm not going to go through a border and just hand myself over to the Gestapo, you know, something like that.
No, there's no point in willingly going to a place where they're going to kill you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now I am over in Europe.
That's wild, man. It's, you know, I'm sorry that you had to make that decision.
Yeah, like I'm planning to get citizenship over here because I am also a naturalized citizen, right? I was born in China. I came to the U.S., was adopted, and I was naturalized to be a U.S. citizen. And I really do think next they are going to be coming after naturalized citizens. And I think I'm going to be pretty high up on that list of people to get denaturalized. So, yeah.
That's insane, man. That's so for the people who don't know, because this is actually a really good thing to make people aware that you could do, is anybody can do a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request. And how did you go about doing that? What did you ask for?
So on my revocation letter, it actually gives you like very clear instructions. It gave me a link to this website where you could just file a FOIA, and like it's very, very user friendly. You just click through the drop downs where it's like Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection, and then you write in your little, you know, what you want your FOIA to be about. It asks you a couple of questions, and then you submit it right online. Yeah, it was, I think, probably a couple Google searches, and you'd find that information.
That's cool. I love how you literally just told me to Google it.
The last time I used it.
Google it there. Do your own research.
The last time I used a FOIA request was to see who ratted on me about my home doggy daycare business to the to animal control.
Did it come up?
Yeah, I figured. It has the, like, the names of all the neighbors who called.
it was all his neighbors.
All of his neighbors. Andrew, you know when you walk into a room and you can't tell who the asshole is?
No, there were two that called to ask if it was legal, and then I have one neighbor who called like 12 times and told them I was an angry man with a gun, and that's what generated the home visit.
They're not lying, though. Yeah, well, you're just not angry with intent to use the gun on the people you're angry at.
No, but it's cool though. I got it all figured out, and I'm friends with all of my neighbors except for the one house.
That's good.
Up the hill.
It took you moving out of the neighborhood to make that happen, but
no, no, I'm still here, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm still here. Can't get me. Oh man, Jack, I think this is gonna have to be a new criteria for our guests on the page, because like I said, you know, I found your page. I just thought this dude's a cool dude. He's done a lot of really neat stuff, has some good points of view on things. And I thought this was a banger episode. And the past, I don't have very long of a track record, but the past two people that I invited on based on vibes have both netted very positive experiences. So I think I'm going to have to do this more. I hope it was good for you. it was good for
Lights
me.
A cigarette.
Yeah. But this is great, man. If how we usually end our podcasts is asking you, there's a better way for me to go about asking this question. I'm sure that sounds way better. But if you had a piece of advice for people, it could be gun related, it could be hiking related, it could be related to current politics, anything. If you had a piece of advice for people, what would that piece of advice be?
Yeah, let's see. So what comes to mind, couple things, just touching on the very last thing we were talking about, is having empathy. And I really appreciate you guys having this conversation, because, you know, it allows me to share my point of view, because I'm sure you're not worried about the same things of being like denaturalized and having your passport taken away and having your citizenship taken away. But like, that's what a lot of people in this country are worried about. Like people, they're like immigrants, I'm sure, driving to the grocery store, are worried about being snatched up by ICE and then sent to some hellhole. Like, imagine how different of an experience that is from the day-to-day life of other just, you know, normal Americans that were born here. So that's one point. And then I think a piece of like advice, wisdom, something I want to share is that it's all going to be okay. Like, ultimately, I truly believe like everything will be okay. And I have learned from all of my trips, right? So I've been in the backcountry 20,000 miles, faced just an incredible diverse amount of obstacles and physical pain and hardship and all those things like that. And, you know, like grizzly bears and just lightning storms and almost freezing to death and almost falling off of cliffs and, you know, encountering scary armed men that I think I might've encountered a serial killer up in Toronto, and just all this crazy shit that,
oh God,
that sound like, you know, super, super daunting, right? Like even when I even when I look back on my own videos that I shot, sometimes I'm like, how did I survive this stuff? But in each of those moments, I have found that a strength arises within that helps me meet whatever challenge arises. And like that strength is always there. And I think in our modern life, people lose faith and confidence in themselves, and people get wrapped up in anxiety and worry because our lives are so easy, because we just don't have to tap this deep well of strength very often. And so then we believe that we don't have this deep well of strength, right? But we actually do. And we all have this like very deep well of strength. And I was writing on my Substack the other day, I was like, yeah, that gives me a lot of peace to know that if it comes to it, if I have to pick up a rifle against tyranny and fight to the death, then I will find the strength within, because everything else in life, like you always find the strength. And I always make this like very morbid joke of like, well, you either find the strength or you'll die and it won't be your problem anymore. But like, that really is pretty true. With as fucked up as everything is, like, don't worry, you'll either figure it out or you'll die and it won't be your problem anymore. And you really do have a deep, deep well of strength within all of us, you know? And I think that should give you a lot of faith and hope.
I love that, man. That reminds me of this page I follow. It's like demotivational posters. Yeah. And it's like, don't worry about what other people think about you. They hate you. Move on. It's like all stuff like that. Yeah.
No, but I think that really is hopeful that like the worst thing that can happen, I think, is like, is if you just willingly give in, you know, like if you just let defeat happen to you, I think that's worse than trying and then being beaten.
Careful, Andrew. Somebody's going to accuse you of having privilege here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, well, I do have privilege. Yes.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And I also preface this with, I believe, you know, I don't know. For me,
I'm sure everybody here would admit, everybody with a better way to A is like, it's much easier for us to do things as straight white cis men to use our platform to say things and to show examples of things and to speak out against things than it is for, you know, somebody from a marginalized community to do that. Sure. And we recognize that, which is exactly why we do it.
And all the more reason for us to tap into that deep well of strength that he was talking about instead of just washing our hands of it.
I love that you brought that up, man, because, you know, this is on a very like superficial level that's something that I've always believed, because I had to do that in boot camp. You know, I didn't ever think that I'd be able to run 5 miles because I'd never ran 5 miles. And then you run 5 miles and it sucks, but you're like, wow, I could run 5 miles now. Like I found that I could do that. And, you know, obviously that's nothing to somebody who's running over 100 miles ultra marathon,
but it was a lot for me at the time.
Yeah, it was a lot for me at the time. And like the thing, you know, one thing that always stuck out to me was like, when you think you're at 100% or when you think you're at 0%, you've got 20% left in the tank. And that's something that has always stuck out to me. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Also, shameless plug to people still listening, which should be everybody, but go check out our Patreon if you like us. And, but Jack, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was a great episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it.
You were a great guest. How about that?
So much fun talking with you guys, because I don't get to chat just with like gun bros very often, especially out here in Europe. So it's I really enjoy the conversation. Yeah. And then, Andrew, like you brought up another good point, which is like, I think about this often. It's like the point of life is to live, right? And it's not to be in fear and worry and anxiety and try and extend your life forever. So it's like, I've been telling people, like, better to live like a short life, and this is ripping off Alan Watts, like a short life full of what you love doing, and if that means your life is short, then so be it. But but better to do that than to live cowering in fear and just trying to extend your life. So
I love it,
man. Shit, yeah. On that, fuck, man. Yeah. Motivational quote after motivational quote. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, no, this is so much fun. Thank you guys.
Well, thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So one of our Patreon supporters had a question as well. We're recording this after the fact because I forgot to ask it on the episode. So Jack is nice enough to answer this after the fact, after he has zero obligation to us anymore. But Rainier asks, hey, Jack, this is a super timely episode as I recently followed your Instagram page for the prepping advice, and I found myself staying for your thoughts and updates on the fascist spiral we're living through now. I have loads of questions, but mainly I wanted to ask, based on your lived experience and study, how do you see us, quote-unquote, winning in this next crucial time frame? To clarify, what actions are necessary now for us to have a functional democracy in the next 2 to 4 years? That's an excellent question, Rainier. But Jack, what do you think?
All right, that's a huge question, and I'm going to plug my Substack. I just spent the whole weekend writing a 36-page document called Blueprint for Resistance, and it's a fictional little thought experiment on a blueprint that a resistance organization that is living under Russian military occupation in Chicago gets and how to resist this Russian military occupation. And that's like worst case scenario, right? And I find reality is always somewhere in the middle. The things that you truly worry about never really come to pass, and then something out of left field just blindsides you. So what do we do now? I think we need to have more organized protests. What we have now is just too unorganized. We really need to have general strikes. Like, if we want to keep things nonviolent, general strikes are the most effective thing that will get people's attention and still keep things nonviolent. And let's not mince words. The whole purpose of protests, the whole purpose of general strikes is to make people with power more afraid of the people than they are of the administration, than they are of Trump, than they are of retaliation from the government. Like, if you've watched It's Always Sunny, there's that funny scene where they're talking about going on a boat and inviting women on the boat. And then Dennis is like, it's because of the implication. Right? And that's the point of protests and of general strikes. It is the implication to the ruling class. It's not that a bunch of people in the street itself is doing all that. It is the implication that if you don't make change, we're going to have a million people march to your house and do violence to you. That is the point of protest. That is the point of strikes. It is a warning to the people in power that if you do not listen to the will of the people, then the guillotine comes out next. And right now, these cowards in Congress, in the Senate, they fear the retaliation of Trump and his regime more than they fear the people. And until that changes, nothing will change. But I tell you what, once we reach a critical mass, once things get better organized, once the people start to become really scary to those in power, the rats are going to jump ship in droves, because there is no loyalty amongst fascists. All the people around Trump, around Musk, around Thiel, they are not there because they are loyal and they truly support and believe their mission. They are there because they believe this is their ticket to power and wealth. They are there because of being power hungry and of being greedy. And once they see that this regime is losing power, they will jump ship, as rats always do. So what can you do as a normal person? You can organize. You can keep speaking up. You need to keep reaching out to your friends and family. You need to wake as many people up as possible. There's good studies that show only 3.5% of the population is all that's needed to effect peaceful change. And it might sound daunting, but if every single person just wakes up one other person, then your movement doubles. And then if they wake up one more person, then your movement grows by 4. And we just keep doing that until we win, because the good people always outnumber the authoritarians. And that's why fascists always need to silence dissent. MAGA are loud, but they are the minority, 10, 15%, maybe 20 at the most. So organize, protest, keep speaking up, keep being loud. And I have good hope for this country, because the entire mythos of the United States is built on liberating ourselves from tyranny. And individual rights, individual freedoms are the core of this country. And it's so strong that the MAGA movement still needs to use this whole same mythos. They just invert it. They say it's the Democrats that are the communists that have taken over. But they're still telling their own supporters, we are fighting for liberty and we are fighting for freedom. We are fighting to free ourselves from the oppression of these communist Democrats. So they're going to start making big blunders that even their diehard supporters can't support. Alex Jones was just on talking about how these tariffs and stuff that Trump's doing is like unconstitutional. Or I'm sorry, no, Alex Jones was talking about how deporting people without due process is like unconstitutional. And if these ICE raids devolve into violence, if Trump has troops shoot people, shoot protesters in the streets, that's really going to turn the tide against them. This administration is too stupid. It is too arrogant. It is in too much of an echo chamber to not do these stupid actions. So it's going to happen. The tide is going to break and they will lose power. and then our real work begins. We need to rebuild this country on the things that it was actually founded on, freedom and democracy and the pursuit of happiness for everyone. We're going to need to really rebuild strong, strong protections in our government. We're going to need to dismantle the power that billionaires have. We're going to have to create a really strong labor movement. We're going to have to hold a second set of Nuremberg trials to hold accountable all of these people that committed high treason against the U.S. Because that's why we're here. We allowed these traitors to fester unpunished in this country after the first civil war, and now here we are. It's going to be a really long road, but it is very much possible. I mean, I've hiked 20,000 miles, right? I've hiked the length of the country 7 different times, and each of those trips, it seems like an impossibly long trip, but just one step at a time, and that's what we got to focus on, one step at a time. Right now, our first step is to get this clear and present danger, this Trump fascist regime, out of office, and then we can follow on with all the other steps. Sorry for the super long answer. I love the question. It really got me fired up. And yeah, I recommend go to my Substack, read that post. Had a lot of fun writing it, and it's got a lot of real good, real world information in there on how somebody can resist like a military takeover of the country.